be able to.
Thank you very much. This is wasn't easy to find organizations that I thought had a similar social impact focus that was as good an example as yours.
Thank you.
So tell me about Informative Technologies. What do you do as a company?
Sure. Informative Technologies focuses on solving two core issues in the IT community. One is the digital divide, and the other is e-waste. In doing that, we also address the talent gap from underrepresented groups, women and minorities, by getting them involved as interns as we solve those problems and allow them to serve and support our customers as they mature as team members as well. So they come out with a lot of skills that also helps contribute to our image as a socially responsible company.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Thank you for that. How did you get interested in solving the digital divide? Was there like an aha moment in your life where you decided this is what I need to address?
Sure. My career path was a typical one for a computer science student, so I was all the way up to IT project manager and a business systems engineer where I'm managing software projects for a manufacturing company here in town. But I started at the service desk, and I got to see firsthand how many computers go through a refresh cycle. Usually a third of the employee base if they have a 3-year replacement plan. That means that depending on the size of the company, you could have hundreds of computers sitting in a warehouse with no destiny other than to be thrown out somewhere, somehow, to make more room for more computers that will come in the next quarter. If that's the case, I thought, I know that in my own family history, my dad was able to get a master's degree in math, but his dad was a sharecropper in Texas. So it's easy for me to be able to identify a lot of need, and I know the story of what can happen if someone can get access to resources, especially in the IT field, early on, and it can change their whole trajectory. Their mind can be opened. So I thought, okay, here's a lot of supply, there's a lot of demand. As I did the numbers, I realized that there were studies that were coming out that showed half of the working class making, say, $35,000 or less a year household income don't own a laptop or a desktop. And those numbers have only fluctuated maybe 5 percentage points. It's not really, there's no one really changing that, in other words.
Yeah.
With all the glut of supply, we don't see that circular economic flow. We just see 70% of those computers end up in a landfill, maybe 30% are recycled as raw materials. And that's where I saw that I could have a good niche focusing on that space.
Okay, great. What sort of alliances have you formed to help you in your mission?
Mm-hmm. Kind of see some of them here. So you have the Mayor's Mentoring Alliance when it comes to all of the programs that deal with internships for at-risk youth coming to us, coming to them, and now them coming to us to say we want to partner with you so that students who have really no technical background and would need a lot of hand-holding but have a desire to be an IT professional or an engineer or an entrepreneur one day could see what it's like to work in a startup environment and do things that are impacting their society. So that became a very powerful driver in terms of how do we run that circular economic model. We would have a steady flow from Mayor's Mentoring Alliance programs, Charlotte Works programs, which is the Workforce Development Board for Mecklenburg County. CMS is workforce development programs to get people who can be boots on the ground that I don't have to pay for every hour. So yeah. I can be innovative, and that was actually a strong innovation with us, to find workforce so I don't, but not pay them, but of course your social company is supposed to be at the highest moral standards. Well, they're getting paid and they have workman's comps through the grants or through these programs. So those are strong alliances because now students want to study harder in harder subjects. So that's one alliance, the mentoring alliance partnerships that we have
mm-hmm.
for our human resources. You see, I also have a citizen diplomat designation from the Department of State. So I have traveled to three countries in the EU just in the earlier part of this year as a part of a young transatlantic innovative leaders fellow, YTILI. And the idea that social entrepreneurship is a great American export that mm-hmm. is an emerging market that a lot of countries like, say, China may or may not be interested in. Certainly the pure technology, they're very competitive, but using tech for social good,
mm-hmm.
that's something that's a more American way of doing things. And that has also been a huge way to expand because they'll pay for everything and they'll bring people here as well to study your model and become partners who are young innovators as well. And now I can go to Berlin or Budapest or Lisbon, those same three cities, and I have warmed up contacts and the support of the Department of State when I'm ready to expand our model to other cities. So those are two examples of ecosystem partners, mm-hmm. people who are trusted in their spheres of influence. The other kind of partners, of course, would be the actual green industry groups, like the electronics recyclers, who themselves struggle to stay alive off of scrap metal. So a computer to them is roughly between here and Hungary is actually very similar, about 25 cents a pound here, maybe 27 cents a pound in Hungary, euro dollar cents. That's a pound of computer parts. So the thinner, lighter, like a laptop,
yeah.
a computer is, the less valuable value they can recover from it. But if we innovate technologies that make them run like a Chromebook, like a new desktop or a new laptop, using open source software, now they can simply do the same. They actually are economically incentivized to be the heavy lifter of that circular economy in the city. They have the trucks and the warehouses, and they can get dollars per machine instead of pennies per machine.
Yeah.
So, combined with our workforce being either really low cost or free from our perspective, they're covered by grants,
mm-hmm.
we have supply chain, we have a demand chain, we have a workforce, we have transport and warehousing pretty much in every city already.
Yeah.
So that allows us to scale.
Okay, wonderful. You mentioned the people that you bring on board to help learn and run your business mm-hmm. pretty much. What do you look for in a new employee? Mm-hmm. Are there some like non-resume qualities mm-hmm. that you seek, like a shared passion for sure. addressing the digital divide mm-hmm. or social issues?
Sure. I have, two kinds of tiers. What a typical company would see as unskilled labor or low-skilled labor, and then, of course, high-skilled labor. But instead of it being a low-skilled labor, laborers kind of kept in a box of maintaining that lack of specialization.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the boots on the ground, and they also are my ears and eyes to what does it look and feel like to be in a household that's $35,000 a year, total income or less. They could be rural, they could be inner city, urban, they could be Latino, black, white, but they all have a similar experience. About half of them don't have a computer. They make their first computer here.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first thing I make sure that they're squared away. They learn how a computer works, how to build them, and if they don't have it, keep one. That gives them the drive because they become hungry for more. I didn't know I had it in me, and you showed me in an afternoon something I would have never thought I could have achieved. I took a strip down and built a computer and put Linux on it, and it's easy to me. And my family's proud of me. So they become very loyal, and they want to stick around for two, maybe three semesters and I get the grant renewals because of that. So their skills grow, and their skills grow exactly as I need them to grow, building technology faster, supporting people in the community. The higher level students, here we have a very good relationship with CCI, the College of Computing Informatics. So they're starting to send graduate students, like 3.0 level graduate students from in computer science and data science programs, mm-hmm. to say, look, they're dealing with really interesting problems. You can get experience, and at the same time, you're impacting society, which is what the new dean for CCI wants. They want to show technology as a source for good in society, as well as data science and other, mm-hmm. purely technical interests. So it ended up being that we get at least one graduate student joins the team a month, so that maybe there's half a dozen in a year, where they're able to allow us to contribute to open source software, create apps for businesses and nonprofits. So they might say, well, can you help us with a healthcare app? We have computers, can you make an app for the people who receive the computers that allows them to engage with us better? So we get to have repeat sales and higher level sales, more profitable offerings. But in order to get a partner who's going to work well here, they also have to care about those social aspects. So in sum, getting a person who is willing to learn, who is from the target demographics, mm-hmm. it's not limited to one race or gender or whatever, but I want to have people who are non-technical, who are from the neighborhoods we want to serve, across all kinds of neighborhoods, but to also have highly educated people who know the tech, but they are driven to use tech for social good, and therefore they're not motivated only by having a good challenging program to write. They want to know that the program is going to benefit others,
mm-hmm.
And all of them, they have to have a willingness to learn from each other, and to confess what they don't know. In tech, you're paid based on what you know. Therefore, any admission of gaps in your knowledge is like an admission of weakness. It's like saying, among construction workers, I can't use a certain tool.
Yeah.
You don't say that. So, I don't know how to do this is like saying that in tech a lot of times. I want the culture to be very diverse. You could be rural, you could be urban, whatever, very diverse, international students. But the common ground is, you don't look down at someone who doesn't know what Python even means, or have never coded before, or doesn't know the difference between memory and storage, like hardware and hard drives and RAM. You should feel comfortable asking, "What I see RAM all over the place, what does that mean?" And then they learn for the first time, and they'll never forget it for the rest of their life. That's a requirement working here.
So it's like you use open source programs to be able to fix computers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just people that you have working here are kind of the same, where they're kind of open and they aren't afraid to tell people what
yeah.
their gaps are, and you just open source with all your knowledge you have in your offices
yes.
here.
Yes. If you, and of course, the structure of the offices here is interesting. The front of the main part of my office is a lab where samples of hardware that are collected from campus or from other business partners are kept in different drawers, mobile devices, network routers, cables, tool boxes, and things like that. So they can see hands-on in one place what a lot of people would just learn over maybe 2 or 3 years of being in the field as a technician.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, working with a recycler, revived, as we call it, because it's just reused, something like 800, 850 computers. The laborers, the workers, the team members, were from high schools like Vance High School and CPCC. No one would have expected a 17-year-old and like a 21-year-old who's kind of working on a GED at CPCC. They're all working together, and they're pumping out product, regular quality, outputs.
Yeah.
And the way I did it was I just took a sample of what they will see over several years and focused on training them on that up front. So that's where I said being willing to learn. Most of the people learn without notes. That way it's in a, like they have a gut feeling. Something doesn't feel right, doesn't look right.
Mm-hmm.
And it can work better as a team. Okay, how did you get that done so fast? Great, I want to learn, and now the team is twice as efficient. So, yeah. Okay.
Great. When you seek donations of electronics that you could use, is there a particular message that you use that's been more effective than what you might have said to them previously?
I've thought it depends on the audience. One is UNC Charlotte and other universities now want to follow our model, and they see it as, hey, this is a way to bridge sustainable goals.
Mm-hmm.
With something that we could do and talk of circular economies and social justice. These are theories, but we could do that now. We have computers flowing through this process every day. That's why there's a whole surplus department. Let's work with surplus and tell them stop kind of just putting things for slating it for metal recycling if it's a certain kind of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And just quarantine it, you know, stack it on its own pallets. And just doing that is all you have to do. That's something that seems to work well where it's a quasi-governmental or highly organized environment where rules and job descriptions are very tightly defined. And if I said, well, if you just hired one person to be there and recycle, you know, rebuild computers, no, that's a budget. They're going to think of red tape.
Mm-hmm.
But if I say, this makes your job, this makes you look good and it's easy to do, and great. Well, by the way, the facilities guys and other employees may benefit from these computers personally, not being thrown away because we're working on ways to deploy them to families like theirs. Great. Everyone feels valued for their time and work. Where it may not be maybe a thankless job. For a corporation, it might be you have corporate social responsibility goals. You might have a budget. Some may have just goals. And they do maybe a community service program for employees or something, a day of service.
Yeah.
Why don't you come and build computers with us and see what we do, and then partner with us to make sure all of your technology is circulated throughout the community. So circular economy, it's like a economic theory. They may not hear that, but mm-hmm. they can appreciate, I want to circulate things that are helpful in the community that we're throwing away. You know, we have phones and tablets and nice computers that just sat on somebody's desk for 3 years. There's nothing physically wrong. People just want something lighter.
Yeah.
That's perfect product because it's not scuffed up. It's a company-issued computer. That's something that allows us to get a free supply. Because what I'm asking for is you spent, $200,000 in your IT budget over the last year or two or three, depends on if you're a small business or larger, getting all this equipment. Can I have that go and benefit my company, and I don't give you a share of the profits or anything else. I'm not eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So by pitching it as a corporate social, a socially responsible thing for the corporation to do, their mind goes off of eBay mode or sell it on Letgo or something.
Yeah.
And it goes to, wait, we could, each machine could be a family. That's an impact narrative. And now, yeah. They see how our students are from the same kinds of families we're trying to serve. There's gender diversity amongst the higher level students who are in IT, the graduate students. So these are things that I use to, without ever confusing the fact that I'm not a nonprofit, I'm an S Corp, that this is the benefit.
Okay, great. Are there other competitors out there that mm-hmm. are doing what you're doing?
There are pieces of it. Refurbishing is not new. I mean, fixing up cars, selling them. I mean, that's what used cars are. It's a whole industry.
Mm-hmm.
The second, the aftermarket, as they call it. I think the competitor, as they say, one is for every startup that says, well, I'm the first one doing it, is not doing anything, because people aren't doing anything now. They'll throw it away, and it's easy, and so easy that to throw away or slate for recycling, and have recycling grind it up into glass, metal, and plastic for you. Maybe even give you a little cut on the whatever few pennies they get per pound.
Yeah.
That's really what happens. Remember, 70% of the computers are thrown out because I can call a truck and it's out of my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's where ease of use is my innovation pressure, I guess you could say. I want it to be easy for sustainability and or surplus to say the same thing at the same time. Once you start saying, stop doing your job, get off the forklift, and start fixing computers, and refurbish on the spot, that's harder than throw it in a Gaylord and send it to the recycler, which we already have a contract to do.
Yeah.
That's the major competitor, and that ends up really being easy to innovate because that's just... It's when you say you could benefit one family per device that works, or certainly one student or somebody. Oh, actually, a multiplier, all the people who work on it,
mm-hmm.
right? Or you're throwing it away. Well, yeah, I got $5 and I make $5 million a year off of my recycling, but the recycler gave us $5 for a box of laptops. Well, I have more value this way. The other competitor, which is I think more of people thinking we're only a refurbisher, is nonprofits, and I put it in, let's say, a lowercase c competitor, because I am not competing with Goodwill, but people will say, oh, well, I do give things back to the community. I'll give my computer to Goodwill, mm-hmm. and Goodwill will fix it, and they have the grid literally a 5-minute walk from my building. It just so happens to be. I use them for parts if I don't have them. The issue is that they will think that Goodwill and those nonprofits, of course, will rely on that as a revenue stream, and therefore they may or may not have an incentive to say, no, they're a company, you know. They may not say that, but they may say, unlike companies, we're a nonprofit. You can actually get a tax receipt.
Mm-hmm.
Our model is more decentralized. We focus on the fact that we have software that we have innovated working with open source communities that can make your computer, any computer. You don't have to buy hardware. Your own existing Windows 7 computer could be running better, and you can have a $30 pay as you go, $30 per quarter pay as you go support. You're not familiar with where things are, how to run your apps, or how to install your printer. Great, that's how we're covered. If you want to pay up front for a year, it's $90 a year versus $120. That sounds pretty good when Geek Squad the equivalent program for Geek Squad for Windows computers is $199 a year for their kind of unlimited mm-hmm. tech support plan. When Windows 10, upgrading it, buying the software at Walmart costs $110, and I'm helping actual people in my community get a fair shot at going from blue collar to white collar jobs. Again, the value proposition isn't just price; it's that I'm doing the same social benefit as this nonprofit, but it's in a self sustaining and scalable way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to have a storefront anywhere. I could be in Lisbon, Portugal, and we just translate things. Have local recyclers and nonprofits and workforce development people follow our model, and with probably 6 months of research and development, we can now be in another country. Whereas, let's say a local nonprofit, they're at a storefront, they're permanently fixed,
mm-hmm.
and have a lot of overhead.
Great. What are some challenges you faced with your company and your mission? How did you overcome or adapt to
that? Always, it's how do we make money on this good, feel-good stuff? And at the same time, when you make too much money, this is what burns people, like why they think corporations can't do social good. Social entrepreneurship, when I started even 4 years ago, 2014, it was like half the time it's, if I talk to my neighbors here, so why aren't you guys like a nonprofit or something? They let nonprofits do this stuff in a startup space? It's like, no, okay, well, you know, then are you going for investment? You know, no, I'm not going for investment because investors are looking for profit so aggressively that yeah. would scare away everybody who's involved with me. Then the nonprofit community, as I mentioned, would say, you're a company. You're trying to act like you're a nonprofit. So why aren't you a nonprofit? If you're really about the good of the community, you would be a nonprofit. And it's like that affected my ability to pitch companies to get this process going and start giving me technology in a scalable level mm-hmm. that I could make money off of, that I could see that the company will be successful. So learning and kind of sticking to the guns on, no, it's social entrepreneurship. We can do things in a way that benefits society every dollar we make. But we are making dollars on our own. We're not writing grants and begging and asking.
Mm-hmm.
We're not trying to sell people used computers and make it sound like it's just up to be a social justice thing. We're not either of those misconceptions. And as time progressed, it was really getting labor. They're human beings, they're people, team members, but labor in terms of the running the business piece, getting labor that doesn't cost anything. That mm-hmm. was a friend of mine. My wife is a Davidson alumna, and her friend was running Advanced High School's program for getting paid internships for students who went through soft skills training but had some sort of check on their past, bad grades or juvenile record or something, teen parents. It's like, they said they could ask 100 companies, could you just, look, they'll be paid $9 an hour, they'll have workman's comp, there's very little liability, just basically write the name of the job on a piece of paper, sit there with a mock interview, and they'll do whatever you say, and we'll pay them based on how many hours. If they need Uber, we'll pay for Uber to get there. They could ask 100 companies that, and make that pitch. Two might respond yes. Yeah, I'll give them a chance. And that let me know, aha, companies don't realize. They'll go put things on Fiverr and TaskRabbit. You have people here who can do a lot of those yeah. tasks. And you would come out as a hero, as you should, because they are trying, and people are slamming the door, and they're not even on their own yet.
Mm-hmm.
That changed the whole narrative, and people saw, you're a business. People don't want to send volunteers to a nonprofit and call it business training.
Yeah.
They want workforce development at a startup.
Mm-hmm.
And that became something that gave me confidence. And then as I found graduate students, particularly international students, also wanting to get American experience, but they're getting their door shut in their face too, frankly. And graduate admissions internationally for CCI have dropped 50% year to year. So there's this idea that it's not worth your time to spend your degree, to come here, pay the ticket, pay for a degree here, and then if you don't get a job in 3 months, or even an internship, you have 3 months to get somebody to put you on their payroll, or even take an unpaid internship, or you'll be sent right back to your country of origin.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't come back for a while, because you were on a student visa. Well, they come highly motivated to work, and they're flexible with projects. Like, I can pay them on a stipend, and they're used to working like that as a research assistant, but I can do professional work with them as well, so I can provide additional sales to those same schools that provided the labor, or to the communities that got the computers. I can provide website development or social media or other kinds of higher level services to them. So that really was the challenge, figuring out how do I monetize my time, not scare everybody off, or get off of the track of what is unique about our focus, which is we're helping people, every computer that is in usable condition to go to a family who wants it, affordably, and at a price point that makes us money. So computers are, for example, like $75 to
$100.
Mm-hmm. Can't get that at Walmart. They don't sell computers at Dollar Tree, so
yeah,
it's actually cheaper than Goodwill. So
yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Final question here for you. Mm-hmm. How have the experiences that you have had during your entire career influenced the way you now run your company? You touched upon your previous background, mm-hmm. But just dealing with the different management that you've had, has that...
In my career?
Yeah.
Versus being an entrepreneur?
Yeah. Have those experiences mm-hmm. formed you in a way of how yeah. you now interact with yes. your...
I like finding patterns that and turning it and productionizing those patterns. At the company I left at, I scoured their manuals. From $9 an hour jobs during the recession, I constantly stayed employed and used tech skills and their employee manuals, education reimbursement programs, educational incentive programs to constantly build my skills so I could take whatever job, be scrappy about it, and learn what it's like to get a lower income kind of job, hourly job, well beneath my skill level as someone who has, studied computer science at NC State, but stay employed rather than go unemployed during, mm-hmm. 10 years ago was the recession, and that's when I was kind of really, early mid-20s, so I'm fully on my own. I'm kind of getting married and everything else. I have to do something.
Yeah.
That experience allowed me to... pause for a second. I think it's the end of the shift. Okay. No problem. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, it gave me... I'll wait for you. Oh, you're recording?
Yeah, there's no problem.
That gave me, one, the humility to do things that a lot of people in tech don't do, which is, that's beneath me, I'm not going to take it. That means I've got to work with people who ultimately are working for me today. A lot of tech people don't ever get to see that. They're in a bubble
mm-hmm.
of really smart, fascinating people who have fascinating lives and cars and whatnot. But knowing that struggle for a few years during the recession, thank you, sir. All right. Knowing that struggle those few years during the recession and being able to go into, all the way to be reporting to executives in the IT department.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can kind of see, this wall of certifications I didn't have to come out of pocket for.
Yeah.
Allows me to teach those students how to have that drive. Because if you're new to tech, you don't have to have a degree. You do have to be smart and able to teach yourself. And that's what I do from day one, as I mentioned. How to build a computer. The things my dad did with me when I was 7, I'm doing with them. How does a computer work? Let's just tear it apart and let's put it together again 3 times over without any instruction from me. 3rd time. Great. How does a website work? Let's build that. And now, if you're interested in hardware, go to get an A+. If you're interested in software, you should get a Microsoft Technology Associate. Whatever it might be. Go choose a path of certifications and do something every year that adds to your resume. That's mm-hmm. something that I do, and that's why the mentorship of Mayor's Mentoring Alliance included me among the nominees for Mentor of the Year this year. Because even though, they're coming here as interns, it's more like half mentoring, half apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
And they are now able to fend for themselves, and graduate students are able to work at great tech companies from the technical work, trying to solve these challenges. Lower level students are getting their GEDs, then they're getting their associate's degrees at this point, or in bachelor's programs. Google has programs at certain universities for people who are underrepresented and want to study computer science, so our students have gotten into that. I'll tell them of whatever open door there is and encourage them and vouch for them, and that really impacted me from how I can make a corporate culture that doesn't repeat the mistakes of my own career. It takes 7 years to kind of figure out these things.
Yeah.
And I think that's unique. I think the other piece is my CIO at the previous company where I was a business systems engineer, great man, and he's upstanding, forward-thinking CIO, but he thought, we don't want to give our old computers to the poor, as it were. They deserve better. And that too was like a sense of compassion that was so rooted, and it wasn't a dismissive thing. I asked him a couple of times when I was an employee of his. Of course, I was an employee and then starting to tinker in my garage, as it were,
yeah.
on this thing. And it's like, well, what happens to them? And it was, well, we don't really know. And eventually they gave him the goodwill, and it's like, well, what will goodwill do? They didn't even have the grid at that point, actually. So, but we get a tax write-off. I mean,
yeah.
there was very little thought at it, but it was like, but they're too good to go right to the community. We'll give them to a nonprofit, and the nonprofit will figure it out. And that helped me with how to speak to executives to allow them to understand, you know, you have really good intentions, but it's the same internet. You know, you're not looking at the scuffs on the back of the laptop when you're looking at Wikipedia. It's the same. As long as the screen isn't cracked and the keyboard works and the mouse is good, people are very thankful, because otherwise how do you do homework that requires turning in a presentation, mm-hmm. writing a term paper, and you have a smartphone? And that's everybody's just sitting on trying to touch a screen. That level of need means, it's almost like saying my car is 20 years old. Who would want my car? A lot of people who are sitting out in the rain at a bus stop, you know, to help me show other good-minded tech executives or just decision makers, don't let your good intentions also be a form of prejudging whether something is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Let the people tell you themselves, hey, thank you, my daughter can do her homework now. You know, it was my first computer. We know we want something better, but boy, this is helping her grades.
Mm-hmm.
And now, share that impact story with that same person. They're smart enough to know to a change. And because we were the ones that, particularly I, was the one that opened their mind, there's that trust level.
Mm-hmm.
So if we need a referral to another colleague of theirs, they know, hey, not only do we quote-unquote refurbish stuff, we think about this whole systemic circular economy like an executive does, and we should be pulled in. So on a final note on that, speaking of open source, the Linux Foundation, which coordinates the thousands of developers that create Linux, which runs Android, by the way, and Chromebooks, most major websites you visit, they run Linux, not Windows or, you know, obviously iOS in the cloud. Though they want to learn more about our model. So I was able to be a speaker at the Open Source Leadership Summit, and Red Hat and Dell are there, and hey, Dell's logo is on a refurbished computer. They want people to have a great experience, if it's secondhand or firsthand.
Yeah.
Red Hat is a multi-billion-dollar Linux company. They want to have more people who know how to develop open source software that they can recruit from. So this is starting to give us, this past year has been really amazing in being able to travel internationally, to Silicon Valley, and then statewide, of course, with the Appalachian Energy Summit, where other universities also want to understand where we come from, not only as a service provider or a quote-unquote vendor, which I kind of, that's another category I don't like, you're for-profits, I'm not for-profits as it were, you're a vendor, no, I'm a partner. So in this case, folks like yourself and professors in computer science, they all see me as, hey, can you guest lecture or can you guest speak? Can we do a class project? We continuously build a better reputation then that way by staying to our principles, saying that we're a social enterprise. We're not pretending to be nonprofit. We respect what they are doing. We're not pretending to be a typical venture-backed startup.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of pump and dump, you know, again, no offense to my neighbors in the building, but 5 years later, you expect to be exited, you know, I don't want to exit from this.
Yeah.
5 years ago, I wanted to be, there's a million people who've gotten their first computer from somebody in their neighborhood, and we got, $30 or something for helping make that happen and grow the way Uber did.
Exactly.
You know?
Cool. Well, thank you very much for sitting down with me and answering all these questions that I have for you.
Sure.